Chapter 9. A short man with dark hair and skin, blue eyes, and blonde eyebrows called for Raymond at his apartment at 10:17 the morning of July 14, 1956, the day after the investigating committee had published their report on Johnny, and a hot Saturday morning it was. The man's name was Zilkoff. He was director of the KGB, or Committee of State Security, for the region of the United States of America east of the Mississippi River. The MVD, or Ministry of Internal Affairs, is much larger. The MVD had very wide powers and functions, but they hold to a jurisdiction of a somewhat more public nature inside the Soviet Union. The KGB, however, is the secret police. Its director has ministerial rank today, and is a much more feared personality than Gomel, the present MVD head. Zilkoff was proud of the power he represented. Raymond opened in response to the doorbell and stared coldly at the strange man. They disliked each other instantly, which was nothing against Zilkoff, because Raymond disliked almost everyone instantly.
"Yes," Raymond drawled obnoxiously. "My name is Zilkoff, Mr. Shaw. As you were advised by telephone this morning, I've come to drive you to the Swarden Sanitarium."
"You are late," Raymond told him, and turned his back to walk toward his baggage, leaving the man to decide whether he would enter or wait in the corridor.
"I am exactly 2 minutes late," the short man snapped.
"That is late, isn't it? An appointment is an oral contract. If we should happen to have any other business in the future, try to remember that."
"Why do you have 3 bags? How many bags do you think you will need in the hospital?"
"Have I asked you to help me with the bags?"
"That is not the point. An accident case is not admitted to a hospital with 3 pieces of baggage. At the most, you may bring some necessaries in an attaché case."
"An attaché case?"
"You do know what that is?"
"Of course I know what that is."
"Do you have one?"
"One. I have 3.
"Please to place your necessaries into one of your 3 attaché cases, and we will go."
"No."
"No?"
"I will get there myself. I was told absolutely nothing about having to pack only the bare necessities into a leather envelope. I was told absolutely nothing about having to have to cope with a minor functionary of an obscure little hospital. That will be all. Return to your work. I will handle this myself."
Raymond began to close the door in Zilkov's face.
"Wait!"
"Wait nothing. Get your foot out of the door, you boor. Out! Out!"
"You cannot!"
The short man threw his weight against the door, but Raymond's greater weight and superior strength gradually slid the security chieftain backward.
"Stop! Stop!" Zilkoff cried.
"Out!" said Raymond, inexorably.
"No, please. Shaw, listen to me. Why don't you pass the time by playing a little solitaire?"
Raymond stopped pushing. Zilkoff slipped into the apartment and shut the door behind him. The Timothy Swarden Sanitarium had been a monument to personal philanthropy. Mr. Swarden, dead for 11 years, had been a wealthy alcoholic whose 2 daughters had been caught up in the narcotics habit. He had founded the superb private hospital mostly for himself and his family, but also for the benefit of other drunks and junkies who were friends of the family or friends of friends. Through the spontaneity of this ever-widening circle, the establishment had come to the attention of Georgi Berezovo's organization men who protected Soviet security on the eastern seaboard of the United States. And eventually, 2 full floors of the 7th-floor hospital were taken over entirely for security use, the entire establishment having been bought at a real bargain from the youngest daughter, who had still not been able to kick the cocaine habit, regardless of the advantages her father had showered on her medically. Under the new management, the Little Haven was in its 2nd successful year of operation as one of the few money-making operations maintained by the Soviets, thanks to the many patients still loyal to the Swarden family. Raymond had not actually been hit by a hit-and-run driver, but the many hospital and insurance and police forms served to legitimize his stay, or the visits of others who from time to time found it necessary to go to Swarden for checkups. Raymond had taken a taxi to the hospital and had checked in as he would have into a hotel. And within a half hour, 2 Soviet nurses had him in bed on the sealed 5th floor. His right leg was put into a plaster cast, then in traction, and his head was bandaged. He had been put into unconsciousness by voice signal while this was being done, and the memory of the morning's events was erased. The office staff at the hospital had notified the police, and a squad car came by immediately to interview the cab driver who had brought Raymond in after seeing him hit by a green station wagon with Connecticut plates. Fortunately, three other witnesses corroborated the account, two women who lived in the neighborhood, and a young lawyer from Bayshore, Long Island. The personnel manager at the Daily Press was notified to activate both the hospital and accident policies indicated by the identification cards found in Raymond's wallet. The technicians assembled the X-rays, which proved Raymond to have suffered a brain concussion and ripped calf muscles. The Daily Press published a short account of the accident on its back page. This was how Major Marco learned about it, and how Raymond's mother and Johnny got the news. Raymond's boss, Holborn Gaines, dropped everything, a beer bottle and a report from the Manila office, and rushed to the hospital to see if there was anything he could do to help. The desk attendant, a Soviet Army lieutenant, upon studying his credentials and checking them against a list of Raymond's probable and therefore accredited visitors, sent him to the fifth floor just as though it were not a sealed floor. He was met at the elevator by a rugged Army nurse who was wearing the traditional cap worn by graduates of the Mother Cabrini Hospital of Winsted, Connecticut, where she had never studied, but which gave the establishment a certain amount of professional verisimilitude. Mr. Gaines was permitted to look in on Raymond, unconscious though he was, in traction and in presumed travail, and was told the running wheeze of the profession everywhere, that Raymond was doing as well as could be expected. Gaines left a bottle of scotch for Raymond with the pretty young nurse, 5 feet tall, 173 pounds, mustache, warts. He also passed the word along that Raymond was to take it easy and not worry about anything, which the nurse was careful not to tell Raymond in the event of possible prearranged code use. Technicians who worked directly under Yun Lo, albeit also possessing a political rating or classification, were flown in on embassy quota from the Pavlov Institute in the Ukraine. They went to work on Raymond between visiting hours, checking his conditioned apparatus from top to bottom. 5 years had elapsed from the time the controls had first been installed at Tung Wah. All linkages were found perfect. A courier took the detailed lab reports to the embassy in Washington. From there, they were transmitted by diplomatic pouch to the project supervisors, who were ostensibly Gomel, Berezovo, and Yun Lo. But Berezovo had been deemed insufficiently worthy following the disappointment that Lavrenti Beria had been to the Kremlin, and he was dead. And Yun Lo refused to look at the reports, saying with a mild smile that they could not do otherwise than certify the excellence of Raymond's conditioned reflexive mechanism, so only Gomel pored over the reports. He was mightily pleased.